dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO, RAM, SIP. Dedicated to the hackers and the
hello, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 146. Today's date is May 2nd, 2006. I'm Black Ratchet, and with us this evening is Not Theory.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, Dr. Notty.
Oh, my God. It's been a long time.
Dude, it's been too long.
Yeah, I don't know how many episodes it's been, but it's been a whole bunch.
But I could check and find out, but that would lead to, like, copious amounts of dead air, so I won't do that.
Yeah. We'll save that for some other time.
Yeah. It's been a while. I think the last time, we had you on here was Ham Radio, wasn't it?
No, you know what? I don't really know. It could have been Ham Radio, could have been Ruby on Rails, could have been something.
Well, can't have you on Ruby on Rails, because Ruby on Rails is our topic tonight.
Oh, yeah. No, we did talk about it at some point.
I think we might have mentioned it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we actually talked about it at some point and said, hey, you know, that would make a good episode.
I'm old and my mind is failing me, so.
We're all old. We're a bunch of old hackers. Isn't it going to be scary when, like, all of us, like, you know, hit retirement age? We're basically just sitting there and we're going to, like, start talking to our grandkids and calling them noobs?
Well, not to change the subject, but I'm looking to retire by the time I'm 30, so that's going to happen sooner than you think.
Not Theory the Playboy on this Gulfstream 4. Heading out the world.
Hey, whoa. If I'm going to have a Gulfstream, it's going to be a Gulfstream 5.
Gulfstream 5, whatever. I don't even know what that is. Is that like versions, or are they like different type of models, or?
They're essentially versions, you know.
Oh, okay.
Gulfstream 5 is the latest and greatest. I actually had this discussion with somebody else the other day. They were talking about being a millionaire playboy, and they said, yeah, I got a Gulfstream 4, and I'm like, Gulfstream 5 is the way to go. I was actually on one once, and it is so cool, you can't even believe it.
How the hell did you get on a Gulfstream 5, or can you say?
I would rather not explain that, but it's pretty cool. I got to see the forward-looking infrared system. It was just wild, okay?
Oh, that sounds pretty badass.
It was sitting in the hangar, and I was in the cockpit, and the guy was showing me, check this out, flipped on the forward-looking infrared, and it's pointed at the wall. He puts his hands on the wall, he pulls them away, and I got to see these handprints, these, you know, thermal handprints just fading out on the wall.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah,
infrared cameras are cool. I had to go and I won't even say how I got there, but I went on a tour of a fire station. They were showing all the little kiddies I was supervising the wonderful. Ooh, we can check smoke and see people's bodies there. And I'm going, dude, they're like three. They really don't care. But I was like, ooh, wow, this shit's pretty cool. And it was like a $10,000 camera, and I was like, wow, I'm never going to get one of those.
Yeah, actually, you can get them cheaper than that. I know somebody who bought one on eBay, and really wasn't that expensive. But it needs like all kinds of, it needs like argon or something like that in it to keep it going, and it gets expensive to maintain. But the camera on this jet, forget about how much the camera cost. I don't know. I'm sure it was a fortune. Forget about how much the lens cost. I'm sure that was a fortune too. The piece of crystal in front of the lens to keep the water off of it. Was $25,000.
So you're gonna have to. I think you might have to push that retirement date back to like the 35 or so.
Yeah, probably.
If you want to get that four look at infrared, you know? Oh, geez, what do I want on my Gulfstream 5? Oh, okay, I want to push that retirement age a little bit back.
Oh yeah. Hey, if you want more crazy stats about the thing, DirecTV on a Gulfstream 5 costs $800,000. Just throwing that out there.
Do you have like the price list like sitting right next to you going, not theories, Gulfstream 5 wish list?
No, you know, when somebody takes you on a tour of a Gulfstream 5, there's really not much of it that you forget.
Yeah, so. I can give you that.
Yeah, it's just wild. Anyway, so I guess we're done with jet talk for a little while.
I don't know, maybe we can have like, maybe instead of Ruby on Rails tonight, we can just talk about jets. I really like the finer points of an F-22 Raptor.
Oh, jeez, okay, that's a little more pricey than a Gulfstream 5, I believe.
I saw this last night. They had this issue where this guy was like warming up his F-22, and I think it wasn't in production yet. They were still testing it, and you know, they're trying to they closed the canopy down, which is the little bubble over the pilot, in case you don't know all this, you know, LEAP pilot speak, and they get a little error light, and they're like, oh, okay, so cycle the canopy again. So they open it up and they close it back down. The error light's still there. And they said, okay, do it one more time. And they open it up, and they close it down. Error light's still there. And they're like, crap. Okay, open it back up. Nope, it's not opening up. And they try to do all kinds of stuff to it. They're pulling fuses, and they could not get this canopy to open. So eventually they had to call the fire truck, the fire rescue crew over, and they took a sawzall to it.
Oh, God.
Yes, and they had to cut the pilot out. Now, I was actually looking at the log on this, and the initial error was reported 8:15, and they cut the pilot out around 2 p.m. So, I was like, ouch.
What a disaster.
And how much do you think the damage was to the plane just to replace the canopy?
Oh, yeah, I don't imagine that those canopies are made out of cheap materials.
Just a ballpark figure.
I don't know, 200 grand, maybe, something like
actually,
that.
Actually, you overshot it. It was like 137.5.
Really? Yeah. Okay, well, maybe they were very careful when they sawzalled.
I think they had to replace the whole thing, just to guess.
Yeah, anytime I think of how much something costs on a plane, I always have to multiply it by several factors in order to get the right number, or even close.
I think, and plus you have to add the government factor in.
Oh yeah.
$2 million for a hammer.
Yep, that's it.
That's one kick-ass hammer.
I bet you it was $1 billion Stahlzall that they used too.
No, it's probably like, you know, some like, you know, civilian Jim Bob has one out in his pickup truck, with right next to his shotgun.
Oh, they should have just shot the canopy off. There you go.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. I would expect the canopy to be at least somewhat bulletproof.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not Sawzall proof, apparently, so.
There we go. We can like, you know, if you ever attack China, China can, like, you know, deploy special elite operations men with, like, you know, little suction cups, like Mission Impossible, to Sawzall the canopy off and kill the pilots.
Yeah, they'll just parachute down onto the jet and grab on. Yeah. Sawzall. There you go.
I saw it on TV. I'm sure they can do it.
Definitely.
All right. Enough of Airplane Revolution Radio here.
Yep.
Shall we go into the email?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Email@benred.com.
All right, our first email tonight is from, again, with the one with the whole letter in the middle of his, with the number in the middle of his name, I'm assuming it's Stinger, unless it's like, you know, Sting3R. Greets! I was wondering if you guys have ever seen an IRC bot that did Nmap and NS lookup, and zombied boxes do not count. Well, my friend Mixer and I have come up with a modification to BitchBot, which allows users to run Nmap and NS lookup commands. I thought it was a pretty decent idea. If you would like the code, shoot me an email. Cheers, Stinger, or Sting3R. Oh, Stinger, I'm terribly sorry not to burst your bubble, but this is rather easy to accomplish in about 20 lines of Perl. Kind of felt sad having to say that, but oh well. However, what I don't know, have you ever heard of BitchBot?
No, I was actually going to Google it now, but I think my internet connection just died, so
I'm
not going to do that.
I really don't know what BitchBot is written in, so you know this actually could be an amazing feat, but I just don't know about it because I have no clue what the heck BitchBot is. I believe PoundTeleFreak over on IRC.2600.com has a bot that does DNS, whois, and NAMPA queries, I think. I believe it's called AE Fox or something. You know, if you want to head over there and check it out. But yes, you know, it's a good thing. I've the whole NS lookup thing is kind of handy. Not exactly, you know, a lot of people use it more than I do. I mean, I've seen people like basically submit like query after query after query, just like pulling down DNS records. Personally, I'm, you know, a bit old fashioned that way, and I just pull up NS lookup or, you know, whois or something and run it myself.
Yeah, I don't know why I would really need an IRC bot that did DNS lookups. It seems kind of weird, but I guess I'm never an IRC, so it's...
That's something that's going to have to change, you know, when you have free time again.
Well, yeah, I really, you know, I don't have enough time to do anything, so I don't know that IRC really fits into that. And by the way, I just looked up BitchBot, and it's written in Perl.
It's written in Perl. Well, it's handy still, you know. I'm sure they took 20 lines of Perl and they pop it in there. Actually, I'm actually curious what modules it uses. I wonder if it's actually, you know, just hand-coded or it actually uses one of the official IRC modules that they have from CPAN. Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah. See, you didn't Google enough. Shame on you.
Hey, you know, I could spend the rest of the show looking up BitchBot, but I don't know.
Dude, we can have a fourth IRC show. And, you know, everyone in Pound Bin Rev the next day will be like, oh my god, the show sucks now. They had another IRC episode. And someone will be leading the charge, and I'm not going to say who. Actually, have you heard about the... I guess we could toss a little bit of current events in here. Actually, SANS, or the Internet Storm Center, which I think is the like most stupidest name for a place ever. I expect to see all these... You remember, like, the really old guy from, like, the 1980s who used to be on the Weather Channel who used to do all the hurricanes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically every time I think of Internet Storm Center, I think of this old guy sitting in front of this, you know, map of the Internet saying, oh, you know, we've moved up to a Category 3 virus threat.
Oh, God.
It was, like, Bob something or other. I'm sure, like, two people know what the hell I'm talking about, and all the rest of the youngins are like, who? Weather Channel?
You can have, like, little clouds, like, float across the world and show the virus threats. That'd be great.
Dude, that'd be pretty cool. Get a bunch of little icons going on there with, like, you know, oh, geez, you have a 60% of a virus outbreak today.
Oh, God. That would be cool. And, you know, just like regular weathermen, you would never have to be right. You know, there's no accountability.
Exactly.
By the way, isc.sans.org, the Internet Storm Center, the thing you're talking about?
Yes, yes.
The website is the most hideous thing I've ever seen.
Oh, my God, yeah, they really need to redesign that. I mean,
it's not even redesigned. They need to, like, attempt to design it in the first place. It is awful. It looks like a placeholder page from 1996.
I don't even think it looks like a placeholder page. I just think it looks like a normal web page from 1996. All it's missing is the pictures of the guy's cat.
Or the little flame, or the hand reaching out of the little page. You can never forget those things.
Or a couple of blink tags.
Oh, definitely. I think actually there is a blink tag in here. Hold on a second. No, maybe not.
I believe when like you get up to like, you know, oh my God, we're all gonna die. I think something blinks. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
When you move up to whatever they call it, you know, internet condition yellow. Anyway, they actually were this is apparently this new bug out that a new zombie bot, since we were on the topic sort of already. It's actually pretty neat. Apparently they're using waste for a command control concept. Now, for those of you who don't know what waste is, do you remember waste?
It was written by the guys from NullSoft.
Yes.
And it was some type of encrypted peer-to-peer thingamajig, I thought, but I never used it.
I pulled down the source, and I played with it for, you know, I looked at it, but I never actually could set it up because you apparently need, like, you know, a bunch of friends, and I didn't have those in college, or friends that were into peer-to-peer stuff. And actually, apparently, they're theorizing that they're using Waste for a command and control for all the zombie bots, and it's all encrypted, and they don't know what it's doing yet. And they're all, like, going, oh, my God! And I actually thought, you know, hey, whoever thought of that zombie bot, you know, way to push the envelope, you know, encrypted, not using IRC. Hey, pretty good.
I don't think that's actually what it's doing, though. Who knows? It could just be sending back, like, junk data that doesn't mean anything.
I think that'd be really funny if someone did that. Just make, like, a virus that sends out junk and, like, you know, make it look like this, you know, hideously complex piece of equipment.
Yeah, and make it over time, like, send more and more traffic as if it's building up to something to really scare people.
Or have, like, some way of, like, you know, have some way of actually, having a command and control thing and just have it send, like, random data out every once in a while. So, like, you know, when you hear something on the news, like, you know, Al-Qaeda chatter is up, you know, start doing it more. Really, I'm sure you'd probably get into lots of trouble in that, and, you know, you'd have men in black suits beating down your door immediately 5 minutes afterwards, but...
Yeah, they would just primacord your house, cut it in half, and then set you on fire, probably.
I think that, well, you never know.
No, I'm pretty sure.
Send you down to Gitmo. Our next email tonight is from White Fly. Hello, Strom, Black Ratchet, and co-hosts. I'm a regular son of the show, and I was wondering if I could get your take on desktop shirt. I can't read tonight. On desktop shirt search tools. Blah, 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 blah. I've been noticing mention of the desktop search tools offered by various companies such as Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and in a ton of places lately. Most recently, Network World. So I'm curious if someone can explain what the big deal is. I mean, oh boy, a program enabling super-fast searching via file indexing. What a marvel of modern ingenuity. What will these companies think of next? But wait, isn't this exactly what you would find in utilities such as Locate and Update DB? What have done so well for God knows how long now? I guess I will fail to see why Google is getting such props for reinventing the wheel. Cheers, Whitefly.
Well, are you a desktop search tool fan? Because I just started using them recently, maybe a couple of months ago, and I got to say I'm a big fan.
I mean, I'm impressed. I mean, I've never actually used it, but I have an uncle who runs a small business, and he swears by it. But if you want to go for this one, go for the gold, man.
All right, well... I tried Google Desktop a long time ago just for the hell of it, and I thought the same thing, that it was going to be like, you know, I type in a file name and it says, hey, here's your file name, which I could just use Find in Windows if it actually worked consistently. But in any case, that's a whole other story. But I read a review somewhere about the Microsoft search tool, and I was very hesitant to use it, but I tried it, and it is awesome. I can search through all kinds of different files, and I can say, you know, I want to find... I have a lot of PDF documentation on my computer. So I can say, I want to find any document that contains the term 2600 hertz. And it doesn't have to really churn along and search. It just, you know, it takes 2 or 3 seconds, and then bam, everything that I need to know about 2600 hertz is popping up on my screen. So it's not just like Find. Find will find you files. S-locate will find you files. But this will find you files with certain content or certain file types with file content and stuff like that, or email messages or contacts, and it's definitely a lot more than what it appears to be at first glance.
Yes. Well, the story that I have is, you know, my uncle was showing it to me, and, I mean, I was impressed by it. This is actually Google. I haven't actually used a Microsoft one. I've heard of it, but I've never actually, I basically approached it with the same apprehension you did. But, He like showed me, like, you know, show me every email message from, you know, so and so containing, you know, 2 or 3 phrases of words, and, you know, just show me the Word documents from them. And, you know, he basically, like, you know, 10 seconds later, it shows him, okay, here's the dates you got them, these are the file names, you know, here's a little preview of them. And I was like, oh wow, that's actually pretty good. And I mean, it is like the same way as, you know, Update DB and Locate and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, it's also like Dothery says, it like takes all the data and all the metadata into it, and it does a much better job. It's not just saying there's a file here. It's this is the mail message. You got it from so and so. Here's the file attached from it. It contains the following words, and it's just all there in your fingertips. So, but personally, I'm not really heavily into it because I don't have that much important stuff. So who cares? Really, I think I might install it at work because I'm starting to get tons and tons of email, and I save. I'm a pack rat for email. I save everything, and it's handy to say, show me all messages containing this phrase from such and such a person. So when they say, I never said that, you say, yes, you did.
And here it is, sucker.
Yeah, it's almost as bad as return receipts.
Oh, God, don't get me started.
Oh, God, I hate return receipts. You know what drives me nuts about return receipts? I'm going to start a little rant here, right here. With Microsoft Outlook, it's, when someone, you can say, when you first get a return receipt, it says, such and such a person requested a return receipt when you read it or when you replied or when you deleted it or when, there's like four or five different events you can tie it to. And it says, it prompts you up the first time saying, so-and-so wanted you to send a return receipt. And you said, would you like to do this, yes or no? So, and it has a little checkbox of don't show me this again. So if I click don't show me this again and I click no, what would you think the proper idea would be?
That it wouldn't send a response. And then in the future, it wouldn't ask you and it still wouldn't send a response.
Yes. No, it doesn't do that. Go
figure. Of course.
No, it says, okay, you don't want to send a response. I'll never ask you again, but I'll send it for you. And I was thoroughly pissed off when I found this out, when I walked over to someone's desk whose computer I was working on, and I see a return receipt from me, and I was like, what?
Now, wait a second. Does it send the first one that you just said no to?
No, it doesn't.
Or only the subsequent ones?
Only the subsequent ones. So it does obey you in that sense, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny way to look at it. It's like, okay, I don't want to do it this time, and I'm not going to ask you again. But it never said, well, what would you like to do when I don't ask you?
See,
technically, I guess you could say it's not a bug.
Well, no, I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, it's completely, illogical.
Oh, yeah, I would never in a million years think that if I wrote a piece of software like that, that's how it should work. So,
just this one time, never ask me again, but send everything else out. Yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah. I don't want to do this now, but I sure as hell want to do it every time in the future. Okay, that makes sense.
Microsoft. I'm not even sure. I wonder if this is like actually. I wonder if they copied it from somebody else. Like, Lotus Note does this, so it must be a feature.
God, Lotus Notes.
dude.
What? Why does it even exist? I don't understand. I don't really know much about Lotus Notes, but I hear some people are just zealous about it and they think it's the greatest thing in the world. I don't get it.
Oh, it's better than certain other things, like, say, two words and two letters, Lotus CC Mail.
Okay, you're probably right about that.
Yeah. So it's not the worst, but it's down there.
Okay.
And actually, I forgot to mention this in the email. Whitefly is the only person to ever say this. P.S. The bioinformatics episode was kick-ass. So, congratulations, Whitefly. I can't tell if you're being sarcastic there, but I think you're the only person in the human race who has ever thought that. Of course,
really?
I don't know. It was a buggy episode. It was buggier than a copy of Microsoft Vista.
Really? I was pretty sure I heard that one, and it didn't really strike me as buggy.
I guess not. Maybe it came off better. I couldn't listen to it on my iPod because I was there. I was there for the horror, and I was like, I don't want to listen to this again. So
maybe I'm thinking of a different episode. But I listened to it in the car, and it was just fine, I thought. But maybe I'm crazy. I'll have to go back and listen.
Well, we always know you're crazy.
Well, I'm definitely crazy. There's no doubt. But maybe specifically with respect to this, I'm crazy. Anyway.
All right. Shall we go into show and tell?
Maybe.
Well, we're going to do it anyway, so screw you.
Is it good enough that I told you I was on a Gulfstream 5 and I can't tell you who it belonged to? That's my show and tell.
Well, here you go. We can give you some material to bail yourself out. As always, we'll ask you. So, what's up with Beltmine.net?
Oh, hey. Well, I think your VoIP is breaking up or something. I didn't really hear what you said.
Beltmine.net.
Actually, there have been some behind-the-scenes changes on the development site, but it's going nowhere fast just because I have even less time than I had before. So I keep trying to make time, and I make time a little bit here and there, but never enough to, you know, rally the troops and get everybody excited and say, hey, here's the new Bell's Mind. Like, that's what my goal is, and who knows how long it's going to take.
Sure, behind-the-scenes changes. That's like, oh, yeah, I did all this work that you can't see, so... But it's there, it really is. Look at the left hand.
No, actually, you know what? If you want, I'll show you the code sometime, and you'll see it's wildly different, and it does exactly the same thing, except it's like 10 times faster.
I'll be able to query the database faster.
Oh yeah, you'll be able to pull my whole database in 1 second.
Because you're using Postgres.
Of course.
And
if I was using MySQL, I don't know what would happen. It would probably just crash.
There'd be a tear in the space-time fabric itself.
MySQL sucks. Oh, my God, it sucks so bad. I had to get it out.
Well, not bad. I think, how long did it take? Like, you know, 25 minutes almost. I think that's a record, man.
Yeah, you know, usually I just start talking to people, even if we're not talking about computers, and I'll just start screaming like I have Tourette's or something. That MySQL sucks. But I managed to keep it under control, probably because I spat it out and screamed about it at work today.
Do you use MySQL at work? Because that would just be the ultimate irony.
Hold on a second. Do I? I don't think so. Somebody asked me if I could use it for something, though.
Are they still alive?
Oh, no. Actually,
did you bury them down in the Bronx?
No. They were curious about using PHP to hook up to some database and asked if it was possible with MySQL and Microsoft and Oracle, which it is. But in any case... Yeah, the company that I'm doing this work for is considering adding MySQL to their offering of databases, which I think is ridiculous. So.
Not theirs leading the charge.
Well, you know, hey, I don't pull any punches with these guys at all. So they're like, what do you think about MySQL? I was like, oh, open the floodgates.
Meanwhile, like, you know, 3 hours later, they're like, okay, we'll just shut up. We won't use it. Just be quiet.
Yep. Hey, all you have to do is demonstrate your technical prowess to the network guy and some programmers, and you're just golden at that point. So that's all I had to do. Show them a couple cool tricks here and there, and then when they ask me my opinion about something, be adamant that it sucks, and they listen to you.
Oh, good shit.
Don't play games and say, oh, well, it's okay for this. No. If you don't like it at all, it totally sucks for absolutely everything.
And we all know that Not Theory thinks that, which is really scary.
Actually, no, I did at some point think that there was a database that was well-suited to MySQL, but I can't remember what it was.
Compared to what, Microsoft Access?
No, it was something that somebody, it was, you know, for somebody's, like, personal website, and it didn't have all that much data in it. It was just something silly.
No.
It was like the whole news items or something, kind of like a blog before there were blogs, or before there were, like, officially the term blog. I told somebody, I actually recommended MySQL to them.
What? Yeah, back when I just said, oh, hey, check out my website. You know, it was a straight HTML file that I used to edit every day and type in my thoughts.
No, that's
a blog now.
No. It wasn't even HTML back then. It was like, okay, go to this IP address, /tilde, some username, /index.txt. That's what I'm talking about.
Index.txt.
That's keeping it real. That is hacker gangsta.
Dude, that was awesome. I miss the long URLs. I mean, I miss having, like, you know, a 60-character URL. That's why, like, all my websites, before I go to them, I huge URL them. And I type them out just to share the old schoolness.
Now, I saw a link somewhere that was talking about huge URL. It was an article somewhere. Is there actually a service that just does that as a joke? Because I really, really, really want it badly.
What, huge URL?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think isn't it a huge URL?
I don't know. I looked for it once, and I saw a reference to it, And but the site wasn't up. It was a long time ago. But no, I see hugeurl.com. Maybe it's for real now. When I searched for Tiny URL at some point, and some link to some guy's blog came up, and he was talking about Tiny URL and how it was cool, and he said, "Oh, by the way, I think Huge URL would be a great idea, and you convert this," and it was a very tiny URL, to like something that filled up the whole page. But
yeah, if I haven't used it in a while, it gives you like literally like a 500 character URL. It's amazing, and it works completely well. It you know, you fire it in, you put it into a web browser, fires it right off and loads it up. The one time I had an issue with it is because one of my networks that I was going through had used a transparent proxy.
I see.
And if I would feed it a huge URL and it would chop off part of it.
So, oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
Did you get a different page or you got an error message?
I got an error message. And I couldn't figure it out for a while. And I was like, what? I was like, oh, wait. Just so everyone knows, don't use RCN.
Yeah, good call there. But what I think huge URL should do is if you go to a huge URL and it's wrong, it should just redirect you to a different random huge URL. But in the same breath, that it should not just redirect you to a particular random one. Every time you go back to it and mistype it, it's a different random one.
Just to really freak you out.
Yeah, why not?
Yes. Myself, basically, I've been in the same boat as you are for my, you know, show and tell. I've been working like a mofo. I've been printing out all kinds of crazy things. Actually, I think I still have that photo of my camera. I printed out like, you know, 2,300 and some odd documents on the printer at work, and it looked pretty impressive once I was done. I took this photo of this, you know, just pile of like, you know, 2 foot high of pages.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, some people want certain things in dead tree format, despite my best efforts. Oh, we want to write with them on pen. Well, why do you want to do that? Well, because, you know, we do.
I got to tell you, the reason why I like paper for some things is because if I need to read, like, 15 different things simultaneously and compare stuff, it's just, you know, it's just easier to do, like, right in front of me. Maybe if I had, like, a 15-monitor system, it would be different, but...
Well, what they're doing is they're taking these pieces of paper, they're going over, they're comparing it to something, and they're filling in some data points on it. Because the actual electronic format that we get does not have all the data points that we need. So we go over and we consult the hard record of this other area, and they fill in all the blank spaces. Now, why couldn't they do this on a laptop, despite the fact that I showed them I could? Lord only knows.
Something I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, whatever. And I don't know. You actually got me started on this again this evening while we were SMSing back and forth. And I was looking at cell phones I can't have yet.
Mm. Yeah, trust me. I know the feeling. You know, I buy a lot of cell phones. That should be obvious from anybody who's seen.
So wait. Are you implying that you're thinking about buying another cell phone?
Whoa. Hold on. Hear me out.
Okay.
Hear me out,
okay.
Please. I buy a lot of cell phones. And anybody that saw the my Sidekick video in Hack TV would recognize that. I mean, if I'm willing to do that to a Sidekick too and smash it all up and go crazy.
Crazy core.
Yeah, I'd probably buy a lot of phones. So I bought a few more phones since then, and I finally settled on the Trio. There was one other phone that I was looking at, but it wasn't out yet, and I really wanted to switch carriers, and the specs that I had seen were comparable, but it looked like the Trio was a little bit better. So I got the Trio. The Trio's got some problems, and I knew it had some problems, and I expected it to have some problems. Whatever. I can deal with them for the most part, but I have a friend who got this other phone that I was looking at. He's got Sprint, and he got the PTC 6700, which is also the same as the Verizon XD 6700, although I think Verizon has disabled several other features on it that Sprint disabled. But anyway.
Yeah, like all the normal features that you would expect from a cell phone? Yes, they have.
Yeah, I'm sure. Why they do that, who knows? I guess because Verizon is the only cell phone company that actually has any kind of service, they can do whatever they want. Whereas everybody else, yeah, you can get any phone you want, but it just never works anywhere. So, anyway, so I saw this thing. My buddy showed it to me, and the screen is better. It's faster. It has more memory free. Just pretty much everything about it is better, and I'm pretty upset about it. So I think I'm going to yell at Verizon and say, you know, I've had so many problems with the Trio. I want to switch to this other phone. It's a cheaper phone, so they'd probably let me, maybe they would let me do it. I don't know, but if they did, I would definitely love to switch. But that said, I will not buy another cell phone for quite some time.
Didn't you say this, like, last time?
Yeah, things have changed, though. Like, the Trio has problems, but it does enough of what I need it to do that I can deal with it. So that's fine by me. My other phones, I was always like, yeah, I get to develop on them and do all these things. But developing on anything that's not Windows Mobile is just a hassle. Windows Mobile is so dumb and easy. I really like it. It's got its problems, but if I need to write an application, it's very accessible. I just go online, find a million examples for pretty much anything I want to do, and it's done. The only thing that's tricky is accessing the audio hardware, like playing and recording sounds. If anybody knows how to do that on Windows Mobile, feel free to email me, because I've been looking around for it, and I've seen some examples, but they're all completely terrible. So it's one thing I would like to do.
And what is your email address, since people want to email you? InTheory@rev.com?
It's Bob Dole at ilikepizza.com. No, it's, InTheory@binrev.com or InTheory@bellsmind.net. Either one will work. I think they actually go to the same place, if I had to guess. But in any case, either one of those will work. And if anybody wants to email me and talk about Windows Mobile programming, please do, because, you know, I got pretty much everything down that I want to do except for the audio stuff.
Dude, I email you all the time. I emailed you a lot. I've called you, and you don't get back to me. I felt unloved. I left you a message, and you didn't call me back. And I was like, oh, man. And finally, like, Natus tells me, oh, dude, SMS him. That's the only way you get through to him.
Yeah. Funny thing about my voicemail is that I don't like voicemail whatsoever. I really, really can't. And let me tell you why. I don't like calling up my voicemail and going through it in the sequential manner that voicemail systems force you to do. If I had a screen that said, you know, voicemails 1 through 10, and I could click on them and play them and fast forward them and do all that stuff, like on my laptop, I would probably use it. But voicemail on my phone, I have to sit there and listen to people tell me stuff that they've probably already told me, because it's been so long since I've checked my voicemail. It's just very frustrating. It's nothing personal against anybody, like, in particular. It's just that I get a lot of voicemail that's not necessary. Like, hey, I'm calling to say hi. I guess you're not around. Well, it's pretty obvious I'm not around because you're talking my voicemail. I'll give you a call later. It's like, just going to give me a call later? Then just give me a call later. But, yes, text messaging is the way to get in touch with me. So any of you out there who have my phone number, if you want to get in touch with me and you left me voicemail and I never got back to you, it's because I dial up my voicemail probably once a week, and I hit 7 until the lady says that's an invalid choice because you can't delete any more messages because they're all gone.
And for those of you who don't have a Not Theory cell phone, it's a 900-4-N-Theory.
Yes. Isn't that too long?
4? I think N-T-H. No. I think it fits right in, because that's why we tossed the 4 in there, because N-Theory isn't long enough.
No, N-T-H-4-1. Crazy? No, I'm crazy. Damn. You're right. I'm wrong. I've been defeated.
Yeah. On the next Iron Phone Freak.
Wait. No, I take that back. I was right.
No, you can't. No take backs.
N-T-H-E-O-R-Y. It's 7, right? 7.
Not really? Whatever.
Yeah! On the next Tungsten Phone Freak.
Dude, this is so getting edited out right here, yeah. Anyway,
so...
See, I don't... This is why you're not on enough, man. We don't have these fun episodes anymore. We just, like, you know, bullshit for, like, forever. And I'm sure people hate it, but oh well.
Well, you know, I've gotten a couple of emails that have said the episodes have been fun, so that's always good to hear, so... Yeah.
It is always a fun episode with Not Theory.
You know, I try. I try to keep it lighthearted and interesting.
Yes. We talk about cell phones and how the Trio sucks. So wait, so you say, just quickly wrap it up here. Trio has problems, so, I mean, you didn't really come up with a verdict the last time we talked.
Okay. Trio has problems. The form factor is very good. I have to give it that. It's better than the PPC 6700. I've used that phone, and sliding off the keyboard and using the bigger, you know, the bigger keys is a little bit weird. So I'd say Trio has better form factor. PPC 6700 has better everything, other than the fact that you can't dial a phone number without touching the screen on the PPC 6700.
Does the PPC 6700 have a, well, since they're talking about touching the screen, I assume it has like some type of stylus and everything?
Yeah. The whole thing is a touchscreen, and it has no buttons other than the keyboard. That's why if you want to dial a number, you got to like punch on the screen. And that, I don't really like that. I like actual real buttons for that.
Hmm.
I don't know why.
That's one of the two phones that I'm thinking about getting. However, with like, you know, the Verizon phone, it's how much is, I mean, you got to buy like a $30 voice plan. Then on top of that, it's a $45 data plan for unlimited data.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, yeah, you wouldn't believe how much my Verizon bill is every month. But the difference is when I had Singular or T-Mobile or Nextel or Sprint, I've had Sprint, Nextel, T-Mobile, Singular. I think that's it. Is there anybody else other than Verizon?
I don't think so.
In the Northeast?
No. None around here. Any national providers?
Yeah, there used to be AT&T, but now that's Singular. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can confidently say in the Northeast, I've had every single phone provider you can have. And I started out with Sprint, and Sprint was pretty good. But they pissed me off, and that's another long story. And there was a screaming match. In any case, then I went to Nextel. Nextel wasn't so good. Then I went to T-Mobile. T-Mobile wasn't so good. Then I went to Singular for like a day and decided that was equally as bad. And then finally I was like, I want my phone to work everywhere. Everyone tells me Verizon works everywhere. And my phone is so reliable now, it's like having a landline with me pretty much all the time. There were plenty of places when I had any other carrier, I'd be like, oh, there's no way I can call somebody from here. But with Verizon, it's so rare that I don't even think about it anymore. If my cell phone doesn't work, it really throws me off. Whereas before, if my cell phone didn't work, it was just par for the course. So like, whatever, it's a cell phone, it never works.
Hmm.
So Verizon is lead. But you pay for it big time. You know, my bill is over $100 a month every month.
Yeah, I think my bill is like working out to like $99 for just me.
Yeah.
It's like, oof.
And their unlimited data for $45 a month. They've disabled dial-up networking, so you can't use your Trio as a modem unless you get a program called PDA-Net, hint, hint, wink, wink. But PDA-Net, Verizon claims that they may be releasing something to let people do this, but PDA-Net's already out and it works and it's cool. But you violate Verizon's terms of service if you use your $45 a month data plan to hook your computer up to the internet, or if you do any type of automated file transfers, I think is how they word it.
What the hell is an automated file transfer? All my file transfers are automated. I'm not sitting on the other end of the connection assembling stuff bit for bit.
Yeah, sure. I'm not there with like a piece of paper and some checkboxes saying, okay, byte number 4, yeah, check. Okay, that was a 6. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Verizon wants a catch-all way to just be able to say, you know what? We don't like you, so we're shutting your service off.
You die now.
Yeah. Well,
and the little guy with the glasses like comes to your house and like, you know, kneecaps you.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, can you hear me now? And he's kicking you in the head. Yeah. Anyway, Sprint, $15 a month, you can use your phone allegedly as a modem, and it's unlimited data. Sprint has a much better deal, but again, Sprint doesn't have the service that Verizon has. So.
Yeah, I was looking at it, and apparently their EVDO network, because that was what I wanted. I wanted someone with EVDO.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, okay, so Sprint has that, and apparently they're a lot cheaper. So I need to look into that. I can't have these phone yet because my contract isn't up till November. So I think right now Verizon is sadly out of the picture, and the PPC 6700 is going to reign supreme for the time being. I'm going to go over and talk to Nextel and say, you know, hey, can you give me? And worst comes to worst, I will come crawling back to T-Mobile and become their bitch again, and I'll just get like an MDA or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we talked about this. Which MDA were you talking about?
Oh, I was talking about the one with the slide-out keyboard. It's like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. The MDA that I really like is the one that has the flip-around screen. That's the S.
I was looking at that, and I was, and I mean, like Stank Dog was also talking about that when we were chatting it up, and I was looking at it. It's just way too fucking big.
Yeah, but it's got a 533 megahertz processor. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And it's got a VGA screen. I think it's 640 by 480. That's really cool.
Okay, that's something I didn't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
it was big. The way I looked at it, I compared it to a 6700. It was big, it was clunky, and I looked at it and said, there's no real, you know, major thing to this.
Yeah, well, the thing about it, it's bigger than the PPC 6700. I've held both of them, and they're just, I mean, the NDA, I don't know if it's the NDA 5 or NDA 6 or whatever it is, but the one that T-Mobile hasn't released yet in the States, it is just monstrous. It's like having a laptop, seriously.
I don't want a laptop. I want a damn cell phone.
Yeah, anyway. It's cool. It's cool, but the 6700 has built-in GPS from what I've been told, which is really nice. I have a Bluetooth GPS for my Trio, but which has its advantages and disadvantages, but having it built-in can't hurt. You know, if it's got it built-in and I can use a Bluetooth one, then, you know, you win. Mm-hmm.
Not there. You can have, like, you know, 4 or 5 GPSs all on Bluetooth. They get, like, a super accurate position. You can have all this, you know, Windows mobile code, like, you know, doing all kinds of stuff with spatial geometry and doing an average of their mean position and saying, yeah, I'm, like, right here. And it's, like, the most accurate position ever.
Oh, yeah. Differential GPS, phase coherent, totally. It'll have everything. It'll be great. And it'll
all
be
right.
Accurate to the angstrom. Sorry, Milliangstrom.
Ooh.
Oh, anyway.
Anyway, let's get into the show topic. So tonight's topic, as we mentioned, is not about, you know, not theory cell phone woes. I think we always manage to talk about this in every show you've shown up in.
I know. It's because, you know what? I don't like talking on the phone most of the time. I'm getting better at it. I don't like checking my voicemail. I always just hate when the phone rings, yet I have so many phones, it's insane. I can't stop buying them.
You're an addict.
I am an addict. It is awful. I'm an addict of something I don't even like. So.
I am not theory, and I'm a cell phone addict. I'm not theory.
Oh,
anyway, our main topic tonight is Ruby on Rails. And not theory has actually kind of he has a bit of experience in it, and I do as well. His experience is at least somewhat positive. Mine was just more along the lines of, ugh.
Mm.
Yeah. So, what is Ruby on Rails? Ruby on Rails is an open source, as always, you know, because everything cool is open source. It's a web application framework, and it's written in a programming language called Ruby. And Ruby is a scripting language, and I didn't actually write this down, and I'm kicking myself for it now. It was developed in Japan. Do you know this?
Yeah, developed in Japan. I don't know what year it was, but
I want to say late. I think it was late 90s, mid late 90s. It's a very new language, and it's really taken off. And there's, you know, conventions, and there's, you know, Ruby programmers out there that hate Perl and Python as much as everyone else. Like, you know, they have their own zealots, and apparently it's a pretty solid scripting language, and people are impressed by it, and it's kind of taking off. And what Ruby's on Rails is a Ruby language. Well, the language is Ruby, but it's a framework that follows the model view controller architecture. And if you don't know what MVC is, I really don't feel like explaining it on the show. So just go to Wikipedia. Heck, go to look on Ruby on Rails, and I think they explain it right on their webpage. It's a very structured way of developing web applications, and it strives for simplicity and allowing, you know, for applications to be developed in just a small amount of code and you know, just less time and effort and everything else for a, you know, just to bang out an application for some type of web application. The Ruby language itself, it allows for a lot of metaprogramming and everything, you know, and it Rails really takes advantage of it. It results in a syntax of many users find to be very readable, as say, for example, compared to Perl or Python for that matter, or Heck, we can even talk about Brainfuck.
Oh, man, nice. Or Befunge. Befunge is my favorite.
I've never took it funged.
Oh, it's B-E-F-U-N-G-E. Look it up. It's great.
I'll have to look into that. And they have their own little package distribution system, and in order to install Ruby on Rails, you need to install Ruby, and then you run these little Ruby strips and something called the program is called Ruby Gems.
Mm-hmm.
They really take this whole, you know, hey, our name is based on a bunch of shiny rocks to a whole new level. Ruby on Rails is basically a subset of Ruby, and it's developed through it's distributed through various Ruby packages you can install. So, why does Ruby on Rails rock so hard? Now, I'm going to let you take this one because you've actually had success in developing with it and not completely cursing it out at the first glance.
Okay, fair enough. Ruby on Rails rocks because you can develop things very quickly. Basically, you give it a little bit of information about your database, and you write a very tiny little bit of code, and then you make some very simple, template that stuffs all your data into the page, and boom, you've got an application in 5 minutes. And a lot of the demos that they have, you know, these Ruby on Rails screencasts, they call them, they say, oh, here's how you can make a blog engine in 10 minutes, and here's how you can add news onto your blog engine or comment onto your blog engine in like, 8.2 seconds, stuff like that. So it's really quick to get a lot of things done, and not just simple things. You can write big applications in Ruby on Rails and save yourself a lot of time.
And if you actually want to look at these screencasts, it's tinyurl.com/CharlieBravoOscarOscar6.
Whoa.
Yes.
All right.
Quickly, tinyurl there, because I just stuffed in the note what I should have done, if I were ever stranded for time, I should huge URL something and just read it out over the air. If I stumble over it a couple times, it'll just take out more time. And people can complain that I have no content because I'm just giving them a link. Ooh, look at that. So anyway, I'm sorry.
Anyway. So it's just a very fast way to develop applications and very simple. And I mean, that's really all I can say about it. I only used it for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Starting to build things, going through all the examples that people had, and actually I got a book called, I don't remember, it was by the Pragmatic Programmers Group. Their Ruby on Rails book. I got that and I started working through. They have an application that's like a bookstore, and has shipping and ordering and all these things, and as you go through the book you piece these things together. And it made sense. It just at some point it seemed like it started out very simple, and then they started to get very long-winded about how you should do this and how you could do that. I felt like I started to build templates upon templates upon templates forever, and I slowly fizzled out with it. But then I found out some really bad stuff about Ruby on Rails, and maybe you should start out the section on why Ruby on Rails sucks, and we can expand upon that.
Well, I mean, just to expand upon why it rocks, basically, like if you look at some of these screencasts, it's basically the weblog, and literally this guy has a basic weblog set up from scratch in about, I think it was 15 minutes it was.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the video is timed for 15 minutes, and that's what they have. And by the end he has a completely working weblog system. You can submit stories, you can, submit comments to the stories and post it and all kinds of stuff. It was very impressive, and back when Knot Theory was going through his Ruby on Rails love phase, he was like, oh, you need to check this out. And I, sat down during my lunch break one day, and I downloaded it, and I looked at it, and I was like, wow, okay, this is pretty impressive. And basically everything, Ruby on Rails is very much database-driven, and what it is you start out and you create you run the Ruby on Rails server, and, the dev environment is completely, self-contained. You can run it on your laptop, and you can develop your, web server at some point, but you can have all your development stuff onto your laptop. And you say, okay, create a database. Here's have a bunch of columns for it. And basically, you create something called a scaffold. And scaffold is basically what it exactly means. It's a, you know, it's a frame. It's a, you know, it's a just a light structure for you to use, and it knows how to use everything. And you just say, okay, this is a database. You know, it, and what it does is when you start the server up again, it reads all your database. Basically, it, you know, goes in, checks out all the different columns, the values, and you tell it, you know, okay, you know, for every record, you know, display my title, just display this column here, display, you know, this other column here, have a way to advance a record here, have like, you know, a drop down menu full of, you know, the options of another table over here. And it's pretty cool. And basically in about, it creates a lot of stuff for you, and in about 6 or 7 lines of code, you could have something that would take me, you know, 30 or 50 lines of code to write in a PHP script. And I think that's kind of fair to say.
Yeah.
So it's very simple to use, and as long as you you give it what it expects, I guess that's the kind of the best way of saying it. We're going to say, like, you know, when I say, you know, what it expects, we'll cover this and why it sucks. So, you know, why does Ruby on Rails suck? I think this episode is basically going to be of, like, turn off everybody on Ruby on Rails.
Yeah.
Ruby on Rails takes the relational out of the relational database management system. Basically, you know, it understands tables well, it understands columns well, but it really, you know, it takes relations are second class citizens. They, you know, shove them into the corner. They, you know, put them into the little, you know, homeless shelter for relations, and they just move along. And it's stupid. You know, Rails isn't smart enough to look at my databases. You know, it's smart enough to look at all my database. You know, build the columns. You know, oh, okay, we have certain columns here. We have, you know, templates for, you know, here's how to access it, and here's how you want to do certain things. But I can create records, I can edit records, I can update records, and I need to write like 5 lines of code, as long as I don't leave the damn table. And it really can't handle when I move over to different tables. And it really, they basically just tell me, you know, don't even look outside the table. You know, it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
If Rails is taking a, you know, latex glove to my database schema, how about, you know, feeling up those foreign key constraints that I set up? You know, it's kind of a good hint on how to arrange has many and belongs to associations.
Right. I totally agree. And I read the rationale as to why it doesn't do that. And the rationale to me was ridiculous. They said basically they don't want to tie it to any particular database backend. So they want to have, like, the smallest subset they can of database features that every database has. Now, they were talking about using some, I forget exactly which database it was, but it was some flat file database. Well, I used flat file database. You know, it was a really loose term because flat files really aren't databases. But it was some, like, text-based database that didn't have foreign key constraints. So they said, well, if we're going to interoperate with this, that we won't be able to, you know, pull foreign key constraints out of it. So why should we do it for anybody? Which is stupid. You know what? People like MySQL and they like Postgres and they like real databases. Why don't you use those set of features? They all have foreign keys. They all have constraints. They all have, you know, a million different things that you could use. And if they were added to Ruby on Rails, it'd be great. And you wouldn't have these problems you're talking about, like having to write the stupid has many and belongs to associations. So.
I mean, it's wonderful for, like, you know, if you're not trying to use that kind of stuff. But at the same point, there is a lot of web applications that do require that, and it's very handy for enforcing, you know, constraints and security onto the database level. But like I said, like we just said, no, we can't do that, and that's
right. And if you have a database where the only interface is Ruby on Rails, then, you know, you can just ignore foreign key constraints and all that other kind of stuff. And just do it with has many or has one or whatever other kind of, you know, names they have. You can do it with all that and let Ruby maintain it for you. But honestly, you should let your database maintain itself. Otherwise, why do you have a database?
Exactly. So
anyway.
Another reason why Ruby on Rails sucks is Rails does not play well with anyone, not even itself. Yeah, so if you look at this weblog in 15 minutes, The cool thing about the guy is I actually think he's a guy who invented Braille, although I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Every 3 seconds or so, you notice that he says, "Oh, whoops," and he changes some type of magical incantation in his text editor, and bam, the application changes.
I have to say, though, his accent when he says "whoops" is very funny. I don't know what it is.
I will agree with you there very much. So
every time he says it, I just crack up. Anyway,
whoops.
Awesome.
But you know, like 3 or 4 times during the demo, he's doing something. He does something and he changes some type of thing and it gives him like this huge error page, like death to all your family. And it's mostly when he tried to update his database schema or model or like some other thing, and it doesn't work because what the dev environment has to do is it has to reboot. When it reboots, it completely it takes that LaTeX glove again and it goes check everything out. Now, when it started up and you change something in the database, you're hosed. It needs to reread everything, and if it sees something has changed, it doesn't want to roll out of bed. So that requirement is really stupid when you want to try to say, rapidly develop an application like Ruby on Rails claims that it's designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I understand why it has to do this, because basically if it had to do this with every query, there would be some, serious performance hits. Like it would be as fast as Microsoft Windows. But having to reboot the server is just, it feels stupid compared to like, Perl, PHP, some other things that they have. So I don't know. It's annoying.
I tend to agree.
So,
what do we know?
You were talking about a book here, but why don't you talk about the manuals for Ruby on Rails?
Basically, you can't read the backing manual because there is no backing manual. Oh, man. Sorry, I had to rip that off directly from you. I never even really think about reading manuals most of the time. So it never struck me that there wasn't a manual because I'm always into reading examples, but... Yeah, I guess it really doesn't have a manual. This pragmatic Ruby on Rails or something it's called. I don't remember exactly, but
that actually sounds like the right title.
Yeah.
Well, it was developed by like people that were very heavily into it, and they kind of touted as it. And I mean, their website has if you go to rubyonrails.org and you go to their /docs, they have APIs, they have tutorials, they have how-tos, they have snippets, but no manuals. Now, the one thing I like about PHP, if you Google any PHP function, within the first four or five hits you get, you'll run into something from the PHP website which lists everything on that function. Here's how everything works. Here's all the inputs you can give to it, and this is actually how everything happens. And that's very handy. So, basically they kind of touted the book that, it's pragmatical PHP pragmatical Ruby on Rails or whatever the heck they call it.
Mm.
And they do this, it's a free framework, they do this free video demo, bunch of free tutorials, but I'm willing to have to shell out $35 for a book, and is it cheap? I know they have a PDF, and I don't remember how cheaper it is.
I think the PDF is like $20, and then the book is like $35.
Yeah. So, I really don't want to pay to have, Paige basically, read a manual for a framework. I want to have something. If you're going to develop something free, put it in. Invest some time. Documentation isn't fun, but, hell, you got to do it if you have a job.
Right, but the book, they don't try to say it's like documentation. They try to say it's a tutorial, and it's a tutorial that shows you how to build a big application. So it's not really documentation like you would expect. So that's how they justify getting people to pay for it.
Hey, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck.
Yeah, well.
Anyway. Let's see.
I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, man. Add some variety.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I personally, I think we'll just try to wrap it up toward the end with the various reasons why we kind of gave up on Rails. Also, getting back to the, coming back kind of to the, oh, it doesn't check foreign key constraints and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't actually. It knows which column, say it's a varchar of 40 characters or it's a 11-bit integer, but it doesn't actually do anything with this information. Like, for example, if I have a character that's a character field that's 40 characters long, and I tell it, okay, pop this 80, character string in there. Like, for example, if I tried to do this in Microsoft SQL Server, it would yell at me. If I do this in MySQL, I actually haven't tested this on Postgres. Perhaps this actually works on it. It just pops it right in there, and it trims it, or truncates, I believe is the proper term.
Not good. It's the worst.
Yes,
thing
no.
Do.
Very bad. So,
Postgres will not do that.
Postgres will not do that? I believe in certain constraints, MySQL won't do that either, but with Ruby on Rails, apparently it does. And also getting back to the lack of documentation, Ruby on Rails has all these wonderful little rules that you're supposed to do. And if you sit down and start looking at certain things and the rules start become apparent for you, but there's no giant, I guess you could call it laundry list of the rules and what you're supposed to do. And you're supposed to always name your tables in the plural form of, models are always named singular, controllers are plural, at least in some cases. And this is very annoying for someone like myself who comes along and says, oh, Ruby on Rails, this looks pretty cool. And I try to start playing with it, and I just fall flat on my face trying to figure out all these stupid rules that no one has documented anywhere. It was very annoying.
Yep.
And like I said, like if you start and you sit down, you start pulling apart other people's code, and you start looking for certain things, and you say, oh, look at that. All of the table names are named in the plural. So I guess that kind of means something magical. But it's just, oh, God. And also with, certain configuration for a particular Rails package, you can... there's four or five different ways of actually, telling it to, use your configuration environment. And they have actually documented this. You can actually Google certain portions of this. And it's a bit of a if you're just getting to starting on Ruby on Rails, this really won't be much of an issue. But say, for example, if you have something that's already written in Ruby and you want to try to port it to Ruby on Rails, just don't even bother. And one of the examples I saw was there's basically six or seven ways to do this, and one application that I saw online needed to actually have four of these in various different places of it, and it was kind of annoying. And also, if you ever tried to deploy, I wrote a little, basic Ruby on Rails package, and I wanted to see how hard it would be to deploy this to a production server. That took me about, 4 or 5 days of, reading and configuring, trying to get Apache to work with it. And apparently, the people on Ruby on Rails people really like light HTTPD. I don't know why they apparently have some type of love affair with it. And a lot of their stuff is there. And if you actually want to try to get this working on, say, a popular web server like Apache, because, Lord knows, no one uses Apache, it's an adventure. It really is. So that's seven reasons why Ruby on Rails sucks.
Seven pretty good reasons, I think.
Yes.
I don't know. I was very excited about it when I first saw it. Really excited. I went around. I told everybody. I was like, "This is the coolest thing. People are going to stop using PHP." Like, I really thought that this was going to change things for the better. But honestly, after seeing all this and reading an article, I have to find the URL and post it somewhere. But there's an article by IBM talking about how to make something very similar to Active Record that will read your database schema in PHP and do magic getters and setters and create update and delete and insert functions for you with no configuration. Once I read that, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go back to PHP. Just forget about Ruby on Rails.
Well, apparently now there's PHP kind of Ruby on Rails-like frameworks, but I really, Ruby on Rails has left a bad enough taste in my mouth that I'm really not interested in going to try it. Because my major complaint is, you know, well, basically, you know, Knot Theory came up to me and online and started saying, man, have you seen this Ruby on Rails? This stuff is pretty cool. And this was, you know, like I said, this was during his love phase. And, you know, he sent me a couple of links, and I checked it out. And I sat, like I said, I sat down, I checked it out during my lunch break. I saw a little screencast and the guy, you know, writing the weblog application. I was like, wow, this looks pretty sweet. I'm going to have to check this out. So, you know, I sat down, I plotted down, I was like, okay, let me see how long it would take me to re-implement YAPL, yet another payphone list, YAPL.org, check it out today, into, you know, Ruby on Rails, and let's see how it runs and let's see how it plays. So my first major stumbling block was this whole, all the rule sets, like, you know, you're supposed to name certain things this way. I had an existing database schema. Like, for example, you know, I have, you know, phones underscore country name underscore, and there's like, you know, four or five different little tables I use. And they mean various things, and I use them for, and all of this makes perfect sense to me. Of course, doesn't matter if it makes sense to someone else, because, hell, I'm the developer. So I had all my databases lined out, and Ruby on Rails did not want to use this. And I eventually figured out all these rules, like I was supposed to name certain tables plural and certain keys singular. And I eventually sat down and started trying it, and I got a very small subset of the database working with it, but it was such a mess afterwards that it was just like, oh, no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically just that's what killed it for me. I was like, ooh, no way.
Yeah, so, I think in some places their style of doing things can make sense, but it's not what you're used to, and they're forcing you to do it. You know, people aren't going to want to bother with that. So.
The term that popped to mind, and I actually remember this from the New Hackers Dictionary, was a bondage and discipline language. Like, you will do it this way no matter what you say.
I had not heard that before.
Yes. I believe they used to refer to Pascal like that. So you were actually going to try to implement Bell's Mind on Ruby on Rails, correct?
Yeah, and I started to, and I ran out of time, and then I happened across this article by, I think it was with one of the guys who created Ruby on Rails. And I read something about how he thought that stored procedures were ridiculous and old-school database thinking and all this other kind of stuff. And that's when I said, let me kind of reevaluate this before I spend any more time on it. And sure enough, didn't do the things I wanted to do, so I scrapped it.
And now Bell's Mind is wonderfully rewritten, and just look at all these new... Oh, wait.
Damn it, I can't win.
No, you can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah. One of these days, if I magically become a millionaire, Bell's Mind's going to get a lot of work done to it, because I'll just be able to relax and work on it all day.
Well, seriously, my dream is I'm going to win the lottery, and I'm going to hire you, and I'm going to hire, like, you know, a bunch of other people, and we're just going to sit around and do fun projects all day.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah, I'm going to, like, rent this little storefront out in Boston and just, like, yeah, you know, just get, like, this really big thing, and you can just, like, watch the hackers work on crazy things.
Yeah.
Watch us own this box in Russia. Woo!
And you got to have a tap. You got to have a full bar in the place.
I'll be rich. Why not?
Of course.
Of course, the tap will have to be turned off at some point, because if the tap isn't turned off, I don't think we'll do anything.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, we'll need it sometimes. Certain days of the week, certain hours, something like that. Maybe just for lunch. How about that?
We'll be like little hamsters going up to the tap and like going dun dun dun.
There you go.
It'll be a wonderful thing for like animal psychology, except it'll be on humans.
No, you just need to get one of those bottles that hangs from the ceiling that drips beer right into my mouth. That's what I want.
I'm not sure how it would do with carbonation. That's a question.
Yeah, that would be tricky. But you know what? You'd be a freaking millionaire. You'd pay somebody to do it for you.
Exactly. I'm a millionaire. I don't care about it. Just do it.
Just make it happen. I'm just going to throw money at the problem. It's going to go away.
Quick, hire some consultants.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Give more money to our consultants. They're spending it as fast as they can, sir. consultants. Let's not get into that. Anyway, so Ruby on Rails, I got to say, it works. It does an excellent job for certain things, and there's a lot of neat hacks out there for it. But at the same point, it's very finicky. I guess that's the best kind of way to describe it. It's finicky. You need to do it its way. That's what you should do. If you ever want to, if you ever want to go write stuff in Ruby on Rails, just play Frank Sinatra's My Way during the entire thing, and just picture your computer singing to you.
It's so romantic.
Exactly. I did it my way. BinRev Idol.
Oh my God, that's the worst idea ever.
I think we should get Stank Dog out. Stank Dog sung before, and I believe we had a solo by Strom one day.
That's true. That's true.
We could assemble the BinRev Radio classic hits album.
No, we need to decide who is going to be the judges on this show.
I figure you're the best one.
Uh-oh.
That was lame. Let me go buy a cell phone.
I will be the Hacksaw, what's his name? Simon something or other.
Simon...
Cowell or something?
Crowell? Cowell. Yeah, I think Cowell, that's it. Okay, so email your suggestions to radiobinrev.com. Or not suggestions, but answers. All you American Idol fans. I always refer to him as that guy.
Yeah, I think Simon Cowell's right. Or unless that's the guy who is the announcer. I don't know.
No, the announcer is that really weird guy, Ryan. Ryan? Yeah.
That could be.
God, now I'm going to have to actually go to the website or something. Damn you.
Yep, now you're going to look it up, and then you're going to know it, and I won't, and it'll be great.
Yeah, I'll be like, I am you. I'll be like calling you in the middle of the night. Dude, it's Simon Cowbell.
Oh, God, you call me in the middle of the night tonight, I'm going to be very upset because I'm going to be up at 4:30 in the morning.
Got to go in on your Gulfstream 5, go fly out.
Yeah, I just got to go fly around the country. To the hell with it.
Buy a major corporation?
Yeah, I think I'm buying Microsoft. I think it's a good move, so I can just shut them down.
Dude, Vista sucks. Cancel it. Everyone's using NT4 from here on out.
You know what? I would bring back Windows 95. Why not?
I actually had to use Windows 98 a while ago, and I can't believe I once used it. It was just so amazing how bad it was.
Yeah, I got my parents a new computer, and they wanted me to move some data from their old computer, which was Windows 98, to their new computer.
Uh-huh.
And I was appalled at how terrible Windows 98 was. Like I couldn't even hook up my external drive to move the files back and forth. It's like, nope, I don't recognize it. Do you have a driver CD? I'm like, no, it's just a USB storage device. Just use it, you piece of crap. And it's like, yeah, I don't think so.
No, I don't understand it. No, my thing was I tried to install a network card and it didn't work. And I was just like, ugh.
Yep, Windows 98 just says K thanks and bye. Game over.
And ends with a blue screen.
Yep.
All right. So yes, Ruby on Rails. We're not trying to completely knock this. Really, we tried to actually find some positive things about it, but if you go to any online article or try to do some research into it, there's basically two or three examples they use, and that's about it. There's, no type of major in-depth, review of why Ruby on Rails is so freaking cool. It's just like, look, you can do all this stuff really, really quick. And I'm like, okay. Look, really, really quick. Whatever.
Yeah, at some point that all wears off, and you're like, you know what? Not everything happens quickly. There are some applications that take time to develop, and that's what I need to know how to do.
Exactly.
I need to go.
Yeah, I think that sums it up right there.
Yep. you need to eventually get beyond the scaffolding into the full-blown application. You got to start laying bricks and building serious stuff. And for me, I found that Ruby on Rails made that difficult, especially when I had an application that needed to have two interfaces, you know, a Ruby on Rails, you know, front end and something else on the back end. And it just was not friendly.
Nope. All right. Let's see, announcements. So we'll continue announcing Hope, which is this isn't on their webpage, but if you're thinking about doing a presentation for Hope, the deadline for the presentations is May 16th, I believe it is. Let me pop up the calendar and see. Perhaps it's May 16th. I don't know. Maybe it's May 13th. I'm unsure. Anyway, it's mid-May. That's when it is. So, you know, get it before May 13th, and you'll definitely be safe. I don't think they have this up on their webpage, but I got a email announcement from their mailing list saying, oh, you know, if you know anybody, you might want to tell them this. So I'm telling this to all of you because I'm a nice guy. And if you're going to Hope, it's July 21st through 23rd, Hotel Pennsylvania, New York City. Come on down.
And then DEF CON shortly after?
Yeah, we should actually talk about DEF CON. I'm not going to DEF CON this year.
Oh, man.
I'm going to Hope. Are you going to DEF CON? Are you even going to Hope? I don't even know.
You know, that's a tough call. I don't know yet.
Might be flying around your Gulfstream.
Yeah, Hope is pretty much in the bag. Hope is pretty much locked down. I don't have to go very far to get there. But DEF CON is a maybe.
Oh, okay.
If I quit my job, then it's definitely. But.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah. If you win the lottery again, we'll have the millionaires, and we'll go to Hope, DEF CON. Carolina Con. What else is there?
Carolina Con, I haven't even heard of.
That's new this year. Has it happened already, or is it happening in June? I mean, I've been trying to announce them, but it's actually not in my template this week, though. Yeah, I think it's like carolinacon.org. And it's, June 9th and 10th in Raleigh. 9141, I think, or 9149. I don't know. Who do you have shouts for?
I can't really think of anybody. I'm sorry, I'm really tired. I can't think of anybody to give shouts to, so I'll have to wait till next time. I know.
All right, I'll send shouts out to Sprint for having a half-decent access plan for their pocket PC phones, as opposed to Verizon, it just sucks.
Yep.
Email, radio@binrev.com. Closing music tonight is In Memory of Sir Anthony by Disciple of the Mix, and that's on ocremix.org. And, as always, we will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Thank you.